Let me start off. Just to sort of show how far we have come. You just made an excellent, gave us an excellent account of what happened to this, if you like, to the sort of high point of Zionism in Britain, which was in effect 1917. But if you like, how far we've come since that moment, since Britain was at the forefront of the movement, the internet movement to establish a Jewish state in the Middle East, to the state of opinion in Britain today. And I draw your attention to an opinion poll that was taken. Some of you may have seen it. It's did get a little bit of attention over here, but an opinion poll that appeared in the Daily Telegraph a couple of years ago. And it asked people not just the usual questions about which countries, you know, are threatening to the world and which countries are broadly friendly to the world, to world peace. Israel, of course, was seen with the United States as the country that most threatened world peace. But actually, it was much more interesting if you dug down into the detail of the poll in terms of what people actually thought about Israel. People were asked where, for example, where they would least like to live. And Israel topped that particular poll, ahead, I should say, ahead of China, Egypt, Russia, various other countries, which also figured quite high there. Then people were asked where they would least like to take a holiday, a vacation in your own language. And once again, Israel topped the list there, with Dubai, interestingly, second. And they were asked what they thought was the least beautiful country in the world. And I'm sorry to say, but once again, Israel topped that particular list too, with once again, perhaps rather curiously, sort of specific, Dubai again coming in second. Then they were asked which countries' populations were least friendly. And the Brit now, the good news is Israel didn't come top of that poll, but that's you've got it immediately. Of course, you have to allow for there are much more enduring British prejudices than anti-Semitism or anti-Israel, and of course France topped that list. Germany was second, just to show that we haven't quite completely forgotten our history. And you'll be relieved to know that Israel was third after that. But I think, you know, the most striking one to me, and I think this is the one that you can kind of understand to some extent all of those, you know, the British people thinking those things. You don't necessarily agree with them, but you can kind of understand the circumstances why people might think Israel's not a particularly nice place to live, or why they might even think that Israelis are unfriendly. But to me, the most striking... Sorry?
2 years ago.
2 years ago, 2005. But the most striking to me was this question, which was asked, which country in the world, which are the least democratic countries in the world? And number one was China, number two was Russia, number three was our dear friend Dubai again, and number fourth, unbelievably, out of a choice of, you know, 190 whatever it is countries, Israel was deemed the fourth least democratic country in the world by the British people. So, and as I say, while you may be able to understand some of the emotional sentiments about Israel, some things that are just simply as factually wrong as that, is something I think that gives genuine cause for concern. So I want to sort of just try and help you understand what I think, what's gone on in Britain, and what is the state of opinion, public opinion in Britain, and I say, and what effect it has on the politics of Britain and the policy of Britain. It's very striking. I mean, most of you again will be familiar with some of the more striking pieces of news we've had, if you like, on the kind of question of Zionism in Britain. The role of the Palestinian Solidarity Campaign, which has been very, very powerful, very, very successful campaign in Britain in a whole range of areas, of political areas, and in influencing public opinion. We had this extraordinary period, which fortunately is in abeyance at the moment, but it's an extraordinary period of the largest university teachers union in Britain voting to boycott any connection with Israel whatsoever, Israeli universities, which would include a famous case of a university professor in Oxford, an Oxford don, no less, who refused, who didn't want to teach or didn't want to admit Israelis to Oxford University because he disagreed with what their country stood for and what their government was doing. This is a very, you know, this is very profoundly embedded in the British mentality at the moment. I think this powerful anti-Israeli sentiment, and it is, as I say, coming 90 years on from the Balfour Declaration, it does require, I think, some explanation and actually, I'll also try and put it a little bit into context. I think, I mean, why is it that these opinions at both the elite level and at the broader political level, the broader popular level. Why is it that these views about Israel are so entrenched? I mean, I think there are a number of factors. I think people point, obviously, to the growing importance of the Muslim population in Britain, which has played a significant role in that, no question at all. The Muslim population particularly, it's been very influential in the major cities, as you know. It's been influential in particular in both in the Labour Party and on the left of British politics, which is an interesting phenomenon itself. It was Labour, you know, up until the 1970s, it was the Labour Party that was actually very much the pro-Israeli party. The Conservative Party was much less, despite what we just heard. Conservative Party, in fact, actually, and picking up on what we just heard, the Conservative Party was much more divided about Zionism. Labour was very strongly pro-Israel for a very long period of time, but as a result, partly of the, I think, of the growth of Muslim influence in the Labour Party, Labour has become noticeably more sceptical about Israel and noticeably more pro-Palestinian, to the point of, frankly, very senior people conducting apologetics for Palestinian terrorism. You will probably, again, remember the incident of Cherie Blair, the former Prime Minister's wife a few years ago, expressing solidarity with Palestinian suicide bombers. I mean, that is the degree to which this sort of sympathy, if you like, with Palestinian extremism, I think has embedded itself in Britain. But I think that's one aspect of it is the growing Muslim population and the growing Muslim political influence, Islamist, I should say, really, political influence in Britain. Secondly, I think there's a factor, certainly over the 90-year period, if you want to go back that far, there's a decline of organized Christianity in Britain. I think Christian Zionism was a part, as we heard, particularly in the 19th century, of the sentiment in British politics. And I think that decline of Christianity has played a role in sort of taking away what was one of the elements of that. We obviously are all very familiar with, if you like, the establishment in Britain, the political establishment, which has tended to, especially the foreign policy establishment, which has tended to be deeply anti-Zionist. I think it's fair to say the famous Arabists in the Foreign Office, which again, of course, I think goes back to the experience that they had in the 1940s, in particular, the loss of British power there, and the way that they the war within Palestine in that period, I think actually created embedded, if you like, further enhanced the strongly kind of pro-Arab sentiment that there had been in the Foreign Office for a long period of time. And I think also today we have to deal with the fact that we have a media in Britain. We have media in Britain that is, I mean, astonishingly anti-Zionist and pro-Palestinian. I mean, the BBC, I always have to make this point. People always sort of roll their eyebrows slightly when I talk about the influence of the BBC, but the BBC's coverage, again, many more of you now can see it, that it's here in that BBC America operates in the United States. The BBC's coverage of Israel sometimes really has to be seen to be believed, and even then you can't believe it when you see it, because it is remarkable. I mean, remarkably apologetic for Palestinian terrorism, and the rest of the and again, what I don't think a lot of Americans don't always understand is just how incredibly influential the BBC is in terms of shaping popular view, but also political views. It's the most far and away. You know, I always try and explain to Americans that it's the combination of, you know, CNN, the New York Times, you know, Fox News, if you like, local news, all multiplied by 100. I mean, it's just it is the sole source of information for something like 2/3 of the British people, especially on foreign issues such as Israel Palestine. And there is, and I don't have a really good explanation as to why the establishment, again, the media establishment, has been so hostile to Israel over a long period of time. I mean, obviously, one can look, you know, the objective facts of history that have changed in the last 40 years that I think have shifted opinion in Britain, and I should say that too. Clearly, sympathy for Israel declined steadily after 1967. There's no question about that, and the narrative of Israel as a home for persecuted Jews gave way to a narrative which is unfortunately too dominant in the British media today of a state that itself persecutes displaced Palestinians, and that, you know, the wars of 67 and 73 and 82, and perhaps most emphatically and most strikingly of 2006, reinforced that narrative in the British public mind. So I think all of these factors have contributed to an intensification of anti-Zionist sentiment at the popular level. Now, I think to some extent the good news is that, as it has often been the case, that has not particularly radically affected British policy throughout this period, even as Britain's population, I think, has become significantly pro-Palestinian and anti-Zionist. And I think I'm not going to try and explain that. I think you're all familiar with the reasons for that, with the exception, I think I should say, obviously, what I mentioned just earlier about the Arabists in the Foreign Office. But at the political level, Britain continues to have, despite, as I say, the political changes, for example, within the Labour Party, which has turned the Labour Party from essentially a pro-Zionist party to an anti-Zionist party, to a pro-Palestinian party, Britain has been fortunate to have a series of prime ministers who have been both philo-Semitic personally and also strongly supportive of Israel, from Harold Wilson, Labour Prime Minister in the 60s and 70s, to Margaret Thatcher, and of course Tony Blair. So British policy, we can argue about some of the details of it, but British policy has not significantly shifted over that time. I think to some extent, one factor that has changed a bit is that British policy has become more aligned with European policy over this period, and it's one of those areas, strangely enough, actually, where Britain's political views are much closer to those of the European, Britain's foreign policy views are much closer to those of the European Union, and one of the reasons why there's much less disagreement, particularly among the EU3 on that issue, than there is on some of the other big issues in the world at the moment. Britain has definitely aligned itself with Europe and European attitudes towards Israel. But broadly speaking, it's been on the whole pro-Washington and tended to be pro-Israel. And that brings me to Gordon Brown. I want to talk a little bit about Brown and what his government might do, despite this rising tide of, as I say, of sort of political hostility in Britain towards Israel, whether he can continue the pattern of essentially resisting that or whether he's going to succumb to it a little bit. And I think again, Gordon Brown, I think there is no question. I think he's, again, personally philo-Semitic. I think he has a very strong religious background. He comes, as you probably know, from his father was a Church of Scotland minister. He has a very strongly developed sense of that sort of Scottish Presbyterian commitment. That's very evident in his views towards economics, if you like. But I think it's also evident in his views towards the world. And he's pro-American and pro-Israeli. I don't think there's any question about that. If you look at the speeches that he's given, he is not indulged in any way some of the kind of anti-Zionism that we've seen. I think, however, that unlike Tony, the big difference is that whatever Brown thinks and whatever David Miliband, his foreign secretary, thinks, so I think it's probably broadly in the same category, I think the political circumstances in Britain have changed quite radically in the last couple of years, and particularly in the last month or so. Labour obviously has a smaller majority than it's had at any point in the last 10 years. It won the election in 2005 with its smallest majority. And as a result, as some of you may know, when Brown took over from, after Brown took over from Blair at the end of June, he had a very good initial 3 months in office. Politically, Britain, Brown did extremely well. Established himself very much in a kind of father of the nation, sort of. So he did a very, very good job of countering all the suspicions that people in Britain had about him, that he was a sort of political hack, an obsessive political hack who would go and who would subordinate national interests to his own political interests. He actually did a very good job of going in the opposite direction, actually, that in response to the Islamist attacks in the summer, problems with agricultural problems that Britain had, he established a reputation for being above politics and doing a rather good job. Then, unfortunately, he rather blew this spectacularly over his incredibly badly handled, misconceived, misguided, very public internal debate about whether or not Britain should have an early election. As you know, in Britain, the Prime Minister has the right to choose the date of the election up to a period of 5 years, and he went through this very public process of letting it be known that he was probably going to have a general election sometime. In fact, yesterday was the favoured date, and he eventually decided not to. This had two effects. One, it made him look incredibly weak because he looked as though he dithered, and had eventually decided he didn't want to go to the country because he thought he would lose. And secondly, much, much worse, it undermined all of that good stuff that he'd done for the first 3 months, in which he looked like he was putting the interests of the nation above party politics. So I think Brown has been... So that's a digression before I make the general point. That Brown has been seriously undermined, I think, politically by that. He's a much weakened political figure than he was even a month ago. And I think as a result, he will find himself, I don't think there'll be any dramatic change in British policy towards the Middle East, but I think he will find himself much more likely to be prey to both those sort of popular political pressures that I talked about, the media, the power of the media that I talked about, and actually to the, you know, I also said the sort of increasingly anti-Israel sentiment within the Labour Party. I think he is a weakened Prime Minister who will be dependent much more on the support of people who, frankly, in the interest of policy in the Middle East, you really don't want him to be dependent on. I don't think that's going to lead to radical changes in policy. We do also obviously have this unusual situation where the former Prime Minister, Tony Blair, is of course, is deeply involved in this process himself, and that, I think, to some extent limits the freedom of manoeuvre that Gordon Brown has as well, because I think Blair is seen as very much obviously is much closer to Washington and to Israel than anybody in the British government is. So that, I think, will also help to keep British policy broadly in line with what it has been. But I'll end on this note. I was asking some people yesterday and today before I came here just for, you know, what is happening? What is the mood in Britain today about Israel, about Middle East peace process? And somebody, I thought, gave a very telling story, which is that actually, taking that, going back to that Daily Telegraph poll, there have been some more recent polls which have shown actually a more sympathetic views towards Israel. And the best explanation that someone came up with for this in the last 2 years, and this is a paradox, but I think it's a very important one, is that actually the reduction in the amount of violence in Israel has significantly increased support for Israel. It's a strange thing. And one of the phenomena you saw over the last 10 years, particularly the Intifada, was that the more violence there was, the more Israelis were killed by suicide bombings, the more there tended to be sympathy, not for the Israelis, but for the Palestinians. This is exactly the kind of, you know, the Sherry Blair point I was making earlier, that every time, whenever there was a terrorist attack in Israel, and obviously when Israel responded too, there was an outpouring of sympathy for those who had carried out the original suicide, the original terrorism. And I think the fact is that for whatever reason, whatever it is that is driving down the level of violence, that is actually having, curiously, paradoxically, but nonetheless welcome effects on public opinion, which is suggesting that in Britain that people are not as anti-Israel as they had been. And I think that's something to welcome, and something that we can all hope will continue. So in summary, I think the public mood has become much more hostile towards Israel in the last 20 years or so. I think politically, I don't think there's going to be a significant change in policy. Britain has on the whole managed to maintain a fairly consistent policy towards Israel. But I do think I think the new Prime Minister faces much more pressure, and as a result may find himself becoming less free to manoeuvre, I think, and less free to follow a pro-Washington, pro-Israel line. So thank you very much indeed. Thank you.